So this week we're looking into spiritual death. And the real death is discovering that nobody dies. So we're looking into, we're looking at insight, which is looking into how things are, how things work. Especially looking into how we create suffering for ourselves and incidentally for one another. But the plus side of that is that the more that we come to understand how we create suffering for ourselves, we can also help other people to understand how they create suffering for themselves. So, in the one of the recent papers, Bhante and Subbuti talk about how for order members there should be a strong daily dose of insight in your practice. And that can be on whatever level is right for us currently. Whatever way that works for us. So it could be anything from just reflecting on autumn in Adishtana, provided we see the meaning of it. It's the crucial thing, that we don't just look at the leaves beginning to turn, but we actually see the import of that, the meaning of that, the significance of that, the universal significance of that. It's like last night we got given a symbolic teaching by Padmasambhava, and in writing your name on the water, there are all sorts of meanings which could come out of that. So, yes, you go through that experience which has its effect, but then also you can just keep coming back to it and feeling into, what's that really saying about me, about life, about how things are? We can keep revisiting these things and going deeper and deeper. I'm not going to explain what the teaching meant, because I'm not sure I've got to the bottom of what it meant. So yes, we can do anything from reflecting on impermanence, six element practice, to the more direct experience way of looking at things which we've been going into in the last couple of days. Yeah, the main thing is that over time we're gradually seeing things more clearly, or as they are, and we're gaining confidence in the Dharma. Increasingly from our own experience, because we're seeing how things are and discovering that, oh yes, that's what the Dharma is pointing at, that's what it's getting us to. And if we see things in a way where that doesn't seem to be what the Dharma's saying, well then we just really investigate that. We don't assume either that we're right or that the Dharma must be right and we're wrong. We just hold those two together. We hold what feels like our experience and what the Buddha is saying, and just kind of dialogue between those two, if you see what I mean. We keep both of them there until eventually there's some kind of resolution. Yeah, So the main thing is that there's a continuing exploration, of our experience, who we think we are, a refinement of how we're explaining ourselves to ourselves, a refinement of how we're seeing the world, a refinement of how we're understanding things. And that should then feed back into not only confidence in the Dharma, but a greater degree of freedom and happiness, because dukkha fundamentally is the friction between how we think things are and therefore how we act and how things actually are. So the more we're coming into line with how things actually are, it's like we're going with the flow, going with the grain of life rather than against it. So this process goes on, it's kind of lifelong. And how things unfold, there are obviously some general kind of principles, but how things unfold will vary depending on kind of who we are, how we function from a Dharma point of view, what we're drawn to exploring and investigating, what we're forced to investigate because of the difficulties that we bump up against in life. But it can really vary how, for instance, sort of quiet and gentle the process is or not. It's like some people will have quite, occasionally at least, dramatic, more like sort of breakthroughs. Other people, it's just quite steady. You don't really notice that much. You know, it's not like there's a point where you think, I really cracked it. In a way, Bhante implies that he has different images for insight. Like one that he uses is it's like flashes of lightning. Yeah, you have a flash of lightning, an insight where, for a moment, things are lit up. So you see, right, that's how things are. And you manage to discern a little bit of the terrain, but then it's gone and you're back in the darkness. But you've got some sense of what you've seen. And then time goes on, you keep practicing, there's another flash. And you keep practicing, another flash, and then another flash. And they start to come quicker until eventually they start to join up. So you start to have more consistent times of just being seeing. And you're able to explore what's there more clearly and see it more precisely. So that's one image that he uses. But then another image that he uses in relation to stream entry is of scales with grains of sand. So before stream entry, the weight of the sand on the side of samsara is weighing down the scales compared to the other side. But then through practice, it's like you keep dropping sand into the Dharma scale, and they begin to even up and even up. And there's a point where the Dharma scale is now heavier and the scales have started to tip. But he says it could be quite indiscernible. You couldn't actually see it. It's only when you've gone some way past that point that you realise that, there has been that shift. So that suggests that some people's practice will be dramatic in places at least, and some people's won't be. But doesn't mean to say that theirs will be less effective. And Lama Tilman, the German Tibetan Lama who helped me with my 3-year retreat in France, he'd guided an awful lot of people through the traditional three-year retreats, and watched a lot of people working with insight material. And he reckoned that about maybe half had some kind of quite definite, you know, sort of experiences of a very clear breakthrough or a deepening or, you know, something that was, you could really see clearly, and the other half didn't. But they didn't necessarily do any worse. They just practiced, and it was a steady scene. And there are all kinds of aspects that we can look into, because there are all kinds of places in which we're caught up, and usually an experience of insight doesn't sort of sweep everything away. Even if you have an insight into no self, say, that may still leave a sense of a subject-object duality kind of standing there, even though you know that there's no self. And then you'd think, oh, if there's no self, there can't be an object. But it doesn't kind of work like that necessarily. So there's an ongoing looking at where there's an overlay of concepts, and gradually kind of catching another level of what you were taking as how things really are. You realize wasn't how things are, it was another idea that you were putting on to how things are. So there's a steady kind of either seeing through or peeling off of the labels and the concepts that goes on. Yeah. But fundamentally, I suppose we could say that if it's true that suffering comes from creating a sense, which is never real, but having a sense of a subject-object duality, me in here, everything else out there, and that tension causes, that subject-object duality causes tension, which we then try to resolve either by incorporating something of the object into the subject, which is kind of craving, trying to pull it in, or trying to get rid of it with aversion. If that's the case, then basically we can look into the subject, we can look into the object, and we can look into the tension and what happens between the two. All those sort of fields of exploration that we can go into. And whichever of those fields we go into, we keep finding the same empty quality. Yeah. Empty in the sense that there's nothing finally that we can grasp onto, nothing finally we can catch and say, this is it. We can't find the me, the subject of the experience. We can't find anything substantial in the object. And there's nothing substantial about the craving or the aversion either. And as we've seen, although we have to be careful with the word emptiness because it can sound quite sort of nihilistic, actually it's what makes life possible. It's what allows conditionality to happen. If things were had fixed kind of essences to it, nothing would work. And also, it's what allows makes possible us all gaining awakening in the fullness of time. Because there is nothing about us which is fixed. There is nothing about us which can't be transformed. There's nothing irredeemable. There's nothing finally stuck, however much it may feel like it at times. Now, everything is process, which means that there can be deeper and deeper, higher and higher, however you want to put it, levels of transformation. Every aspect of what we think of as me. Yeah, so that empty quality is actually a friend. It's still very popular. It's really nice having handwritten things rather than just emails, I must say. That's such a nice change. Somewhere here, there are one or two which I want to go into now. Yeah, we could start looking at this one. Dear Vasantra, how is it that I believe I've seen through the delusion of a fixed self? All in inverted commas. They know they're not a fixed self. And yet I still identify with feeling, so that I experience stress, anger, anxiety, etc. How in the midst of these events do I relate to what's happening without suppressing or denying? If I say to myself, who is angry, for example, this diminishes the feeling, but somehow feels like a cognitive trick rather than a deep experiential knowing. Okay. So this starts to lead us into a whole territory about, you know, what happens post an initial insight into no self, which we'll try and find a little bit of time to look at. We need 3 months. Can we just have 3 months, please? Sorry, cri de coeur. Actually, let's start with the last bit. If I say to myself, who is angry, for example, this diminishes the feeling, but somehow feels like a cognitive trick rather than a deep experiential knowing. Because that is something which happens quite a lot, is that you have some kind of seeing into no self. So there's some direct intuitive knowing, Nobody here. And that stays with you for however long it stays with you, very strongly. But then it can fade. But you still, something in you knows that you've had that experience, and that continues to affect you. So then, something happens and you find yourself angry or anxious or whatever. So then you go, I know there's no self. So, why am I getting angry? There's no one to get angry, so I can let it go. There's no one to worry about. I don't need to be anxious. And that does have an effect, as the questioner says. But still, really, what you're doing there is you're taking what was a living experience 6 months ago or a year ago or whenever it was, and kind of bringing it into the present moment to use it. But you're not in that experience now, so what it's become is basically a right view. Yeah. It's a memory that you bring in. And it's very easy to get into the habit of doing that. It's very easy to kind of become one who knows and draw on the past. There was a day earlier in the retreat where I came away feeling like something wasn't quite right with the session that I did. And thinking about it afterwards, I thought, oh yes, it's like, because I'm a bit tired this week, I'd sort of gone for what I knew. And I know quite a lot, so you know, it's not too bad. But I just kind of, in answering questions or deciding what to do, I'd kind of, you know, I've answered lots of questions. So here's one I prepared earlier. I can just come out with this answer that I know, and there it is for you. Or we need to meditate now. And a year ago we did this meditation, which worked quite well. So here we go again. But that's not it, really. You know, the part of the Dharma is that it's really alive. It's really now. It's right in this moment, and it's sort of fresh. Bhante, he used to produce these series of points for old and new and old order members, and two lists of 15, and the first one in one of the lists was keep beginner's mind, and that sort of surprised me at the time, but I'm seeing more and more and more, you know, just how deep that goes. So rather than just being sort of alive in the moment and not knowing what to do and just, you know, kind of something emerging out of some deeper level, I can always just kind of go, we'll do this now because this is what we do at this point. Mm-hmm. And it can be the same with working with yourself. Rather than, kind of like we know the answer, we know that there's no self. So we bring that knowing into the present, but it's not alive in the present. So what we need to do is take a fresh look now. And we need to kind of really keep that sort of open mind going. It's like if you've looked, you know, 20 times already today and still there's no self, well, still you look to see, you know, this time, maybe there is. Maybe I just didn't find it the other 20 times. You know, you keep looking fresh until you're absolutely convinced, until something you really deeply knows, and then that's just how you experience. When I was on long retreat, it got very hot in the summers in France, and at one point there were some very big grass snakes around, big grass snakes, and there's one near my sort of circus wagon, and there were a German couple on whose land Vijayamala and I had our circus wagons, and they were also doing retreat. And they had one of these grass snakes. They saw it go into their living room somewhere, and it sort of disappeared. It wasn't poisonous, but still, you know, it's like 3 foot long or something. You know, it's big and not quite what you wanted. And I'm not sure what their cat would have made of it. So they had to keep really kind of looking around to check whether it was still there, and it wasn't under the shelves there, and it wasn't in the cupboard, but you know, so they really had to check. And even after they checked, you know, they kind of came back, you know, a couple of other times and kept checking until they were really sure that it wasn't there. And at that point, they could relax. Yeah. So you have to keep looking, yeah, and you have to keep looking with as much freshness as possible. You have to, really have that sort of openness. Yeah. Maybe this time there will be a self. Yeah. And with that freshness, then the process of seeing keeps deepening. Yeah. What blocks the process is when we feel like we know. Yeah. It's so easy on the sort of insight trail to become the one who knows. Yeah. And that's a trap. Yeah. We don't want to become the one who knows. You get the idea? Yeah, so it's always great, you know, just don't know. Let's look. Let's really look. How in the midst of these events do I relate to what's happening, which is this feeling that's being identified with, without suppressing or denying? I think the best, or one way to go, is to do this process of unhooking that I've often sometimes talked about in the Bhante mentions, where you let's do a little bit, let's meditate. So letting everything go, letting all the words go. Letting everything do itself. Body, the breathing. Now being aware of how we're seated, it's this old meditation instruction, body like a mountain, really stable, really solid, rising up. coming into an awareness of the feelings and sensations. There's not as much freshness as possible. As if we'd never been in this body before. How is it? What's here? Feeling into what we call the breathing. So now, I'd invite you to call to mind a situation which produces a feeling of craving or aversion, and anger is quite a good one, but not something which is the great hate of your life or anything that's very strong, just something which you can explore without it setting off great chains of prapancha and waves of difficult feeling. Maybe somebody out there did something or other and it made you a bit cross. That sort of level of thing. So one way in which Pante suggests working with this is that firstly, once we've got the situation, we've felt our way into it so we can start to work with it. Firstly, we unhook from the object, which means letting go of what this feeling seems to be about, the catalyst, this troublesome person or whatever. Just let that go. So rather than I'm feeling this about them, it's just I'm feeling this. So we own the feeling. But then the second stage is, in a way, we disown the feeling. We unhook from the subject. So there's this sense of, I'm feeling this. So we do our best to let go of a sense of a me that has the feeling. So there's just this feeling. We experience it more directly. So we've done our best to unhook from the object. We've done our best let go of the subject. And the third stage is we let go of any label or concept about the feeling. We let go of it being anger or craving or whatever it is. We do our best to experience the pure feeling in the body. While that feeling's there, let's see if we can creep up on it with a little bit of awareness and see if there's anything about it that's substantial. Is it just, what is it? Is it just energy? What's it like in itself, this feeling? We see if we can really go beyond the labels and the ideas about it. Even calling it energy or a flow or insubstantial. What's our experience? If we're doing anything, no need. Now just relaxing, nothing to do.